So the title of the talk is Allowing Stillness, Not Hunting for It. One of my best childhood images of samsara is Winnie the Pooh. He climbed the tree to get the honey right up the top. And he got right to the top. And then, of course, a branch broke and he fell to the branch below. Ow! And then he fell to the one under that. Ooh! And then he fell down even more. Oh, I shouldn't. And then he fell down again to the next branch and said, oh, it's because. And then he fell down to the one below that and said, it's all. And boom, he ended up at the bottom of the tree with thorns in his tussock. And he looked up and he said, it's all because I like honey so much. So he was definitely a desire type, and we're the same. We may be desire type, we are driven by desire, need. We may be aversion type. We tend to be driven more by what we don't like and what we prefer not and what we want something else or what's missing. Or we may be a delusion type, which is, what's going on? So much chaos and confusion. I don't know. Or even, I think I know. It's even worse. But the three poisons, basically, in the Buddhist tradition. And it drives the wheel of samsara going round and round and round, and then we feel quite helpless because we are caught up in circumstances which we don't have control over. We are just driven by events, and we feel we're like Winnie the Pooh just falling from branch to branch. It's like, I want to stop. And we can. But for that, we need to see things with new eyes. Not change the circumstances, but see them differently and take responsibility for our experience. And this is a huge project. It's not something in 5 minutes. It's a project to take responsibility for how we receive uncontrollable circumstances. The Buddha said it's major shift in the way we look at reality, and he called it the lion's roar. That it was like a total shift to turn around and say, I am taking responsibility for my experience, how I am with things, and not trying to control them all the time. Well, how do we do that? If our experience keeps kind of attacking us in a way, we want to control it because it's coming, it's going, it gives us things, it doesn't give us things, we fall down off the tree all the time. There's a Tibetan phrase that says, every experience, everything that arises tends to arise as a threat. And we end up having a mindset of coping. We cope with this, we cope with that, we cope with struggle, we cope with disease, we cope with change, we cope with violence, we cope with neediness. All day we're busy. And you could say a lot of that is around coping. Trying to sort things out so we are safe, comfortable, happy, and okay, and nothing missing. Impossible. So we respond in many, many different ways, and We respond by covering over our issues. We respond by running off into the mobile phones, and we respond by escaping in different ways, and we respond by avoiding things, disconnecting. In this retreat, we change circumstances, giving our mobile phones major, major step, and a little bit more naked without our phones. We enter space here together where we don't feel quite so caught up in the flood of diversions and busyness. We stop talking. We sit quietly for hours. So we've created a circumstances where there's less delusion and avoidance. And it may not be so easy for you, for all of us. We stop the running and difficulties do arise, but we have the power to look at things differently, and we need a little bit of shutting down the diversion in order to see what comes up, in order to be able to look and see where we really are. And that's one of the powers of retreat. And the main tool we have for that is mindful awareness. Mindful awareness allows us to see things in a way, as we said yesterday, to keep coming back home to my life right now and see it for the first time. Mindful awareness allows us to dive into the now and really ask, what is going on, and can I take responsibility for how I am with uncontrollable life? And we start with simple things. We start with one breath. We start with walking. We start with what my body feels like just to stop moving every second. We don't begin really with the stars in the sky. We start with something very simple. And we remember that we have a power to see things more deeply, more clearly. We remember mindfulness in its Pali language word is remembering. We remember we have a consciousness that is huge and can do so much and is endless and can do things differently and can be connected right now to what's happening. Mindfulness is learning to connect with our life, to reconnect, to rejoin our life directly, clearly, sense what's going on inside us. We begin to develop more of what you call a fair witness, to be a witness of our life, to be seeing things as they arise, and to be a fair and interested witness. What is really going on in my mind? From that place, we can take responsibility. Mindful awareness uses attention. Attention is tsumat lev, putting our heart in our experience. We all have it. We all know how to do it. How can we drive a car when we pay attention to the road? If we lose attention just for 1 second, that's it. We're dead. We know to pay attention. The mind has incredible power to pay attention. Why does it seem so difficult? Why am I paying attention to two breaths and then my mind goes back off to Ramat Gan? Why? What did I do? Why does that happen? It's because that we built a certain mind. We built an ordinary mind, if you like. We built a habit of mind, a habit of seeing, which is busy, like I said, which is busy, which is avoiding, which is running about, which is coping, which is noisy. And we can't just shut it down. So paying attention is held hostage, is meaning is kind of captured by habit. It's a huge power, attention, but it's captured by habit. And then we say, oh my God, I've got so much noise in my mind. I can't, my mind is just going crazy. I can't sit. It's cacophonia. Cacophony. And we begin to think, my mind has a mind of its own. I can't do it. I can't control it. It's just going wild. We want to change it. We want to shut it up. We want to control it. We learn that in being a witness, being mindful, can begin to see events and experiences as visitors. And that's part of the practice, to be able to see experiences as visitors that come and go. But we experience those visitors as kind of bulldozers that charge into our life and take over everything. They're not just visitors that knock quietly on the door and say, hello, I've come to, I'm your insecurity. goodbye. It charges in, takes over the whole house. So we come on retreat and we spend time, and it's a beautiful thing, and it does take time. And then we say we want a longer retreat because it's not finished, the job. I need another retreat, another retreat. It takes time because it's the usual mind. We invested so much in the usual mind. And we forgot how much we invested. It's not just us, it's the whole society, it's the parents, it's everything. Investing in building a usual mind. Our whole life we've been busy with that, and we can't just undo it in 5 minutes. And therefore, we come to the practice with that usual mind. And that's something that we can pay attention to. So when I breathe and I would like to be able to concentrate on more than three breaths at a time, it's the usual mind that says you have to achieve more, you have to get there, it's not good enough. The usual mind is saying, okay, what do I have to do? I'm sitting here, I'm spending a whole week, it's got to work, I've got to get things out of it. And yalla. And then, oh my God. The usual mind tends to take over. And we just need to know that. We're building from childhood sense of achievement, sense of getting there, sense of trying to push ourselves, sense of we get it in meditation. I have to get there. This day wasn't good enough for me. I want the tomorrow to be better. Or I expected something from, and it's not happening. Or it is happening, but it did happen yesterday. And what about today? We compete with each other. We compete with ourselves. And it's just we need a little sympathy on the usual mind. That's the mind we've been building. The whole of society has been supporting that mind. I remember coming from I was living many years in Oxford, in England, and Oxford is a kind of a little bit like a Pardeshana of Israel. It's kind of quite a big alternative community there. And I remember my kids, we used to keep going to little mini festivals like every week. And what used to happen was the children were playing games, but they were called non-competitive games. So everyone developing lots and lots of games which were built entirely of no competition. I was thinking about it as we're doing walking meditation. Are we competing on how slow we can walk instead of the marathon or instead of a 100-meter race? So we do experience effort to try and stop the usual mind, to control it, to shift it and change it. And this is simply natural, and it's helpful. And sometimes we need that effort. And sometimes that's exactly what we need, is really to really grit our teeth and say, right, I'm not moving right now. And we do need it sometimes. The Buddha spent 7 years on real hardcore ascetic intensive practice. I don't mean you should do the same, but many of us went through that period. And it's not wrong. It can be useful at times to say, okay, I'm going to use the ordinary mind and make effort. Determination. It is a quality that we can use. But there is another way. And in this particular retreat, we are looking at this other way. In other retreats, maybe we'll do things a bit differently. But in this particular retreat, we're looking at another way. And the best example, I think, from the Buddha himself was at a certain point in his practice, he was really struggling and determined and pushing the boundaries and so on. And he said he wrote, and how exhausting it was, or how difficult it was to kind of fight in order to awaken. And then all of a sudden he remembered that when he was a young boy, he was sitting under a tree, and his father, who was a local aristocrat, a king, was in the field doing agriculture. And he was sitting quietly under the tree, and all of a sudden, totally spontaneously, he entered a state of deep concentration, jhana. And it happened by itself, as a young boy. And then he understood. When he remembered that experience, he understood, if it happened to me when I was a young boy, it means it's already in me. I already have it somewhere. The ability to be in deep concentration, deep meditative concentration, jhana. It's already part of me. And this is a different attitude. Wait a minute. How, if it's part of us, a kind of deep, quiet, concentrated attention. It's already part of us. So maybe there's other ways that we can invite it or we can open it besides determination. One of the best examples is all through practice, whether it's sports or Zen painting or Zen archery or yoga or meditation, one of the subtle places that work for us is we go to the edge and then we stop there and rest there and let go. If we keep going to, if we go to the edge and keep pushing, if we're in yoga, we'll hurt our back, and if we're doing Zen, we'll miss the target, and if we're in sports, we won't make that. There is a place where we go to the edge, and then we sort of rest there, we quiet there, and we let go of ourselves, and we let go of determination. We just let go of everything. We surrender. Go to the edge and surrender. And that's different energy from pushing, pushing, pushing. And it really works. And many of you have do yoga and so on, who know that. And you just go to the edge and then you just stop and you surrender and you breathe and it opens by itself. Something happens under. We relax at that place. And this other way of is much more a dance with things. This other way, the softer way, is dancing with things. It's not pushing the boundaries, it's dancing. We are with experience, so we dance with experience. Rather than trying to control it. It's a different way, a different attitude. And we talked about it a little bit today in the practice. How do we do that? We do that by having less fear. We do that by being curious. We do that by feeling safe, feeling relaxed. We do that by surrendering. And more than anything else, we do that by knowing that what is happening is part of us. It's not something against us. Our seeing gets more open when we feel safe and we feel with things. They are us. The thoughts are us. The world is us. The world is not against me. There's a primal fear. We let it go, and we find that it's much easier for us to connect for longer, to go into deeper meditation, to go into deeper concentration, to find more stillness by a little bit softening this primal fear and replacing it by primal being with, being together with whatever, the breath, the thought, the sound, the earth. The image I have, actually, I'll show it with my hand. You know the snail, right? The snail is inside its shell, and it has two little sticks with eyes. And if the snail feels safe, the sticks come out, and two eyes look around. If it feels safe, it checks, and then maybe goes back, and then goes out again. What's happening? But it has to feel safe. And we can feel that our two little eyes there, our wisdom eyes, our mindful eyes, that are looking, feel safe, okay, I'm ready. And it really is like the mind, because the consciousness does that. It goes out into the world. So we have voices in the mind of confusion, of conflict, of difficulty. But if we begin to see them differently as not just visitors, but us, our visitors, they're our selves, they're our partners, they are our nature, they're not against us. They need our love. Everything that we feel is threatening or difficult, it simply needs our love. So we allow them. We allow our thoughts that seem to be problematic and difficult. We allow the fact that we can have two breaths and then something else happens. We allow the body. to be the body. We allow sensations to be what they are. We allow experience to be not in our control. We allow the thought that I want to control experience. We allow the whole lot. And it's another way of going deeper in practice, of getting more kind of connected to our practice through allowing rather than through trying to achieve or determination. We go to, I think Simi mentioned this, we go towards our experience. This is a really, really important movement. We go towards. I remember that in the Bible, Lech Lecha, that even Rob mentioned it in one of his talks. Go to. Go, you go to yourself, to your experience. Go there. And this movement is, instead of the fear or the insecurity or this is a problem, I have to fix it, this is, I have to cope with this, I have to deal with this, etc., etc. It's going to. A breath, we go to. A sensation, we go to it. A thought, we go to. It's our dancing partner. And it has a sense of going back home. As we breathe, can we feel we're back home? The breath of life is our home. Can we feel this body is our home? We may not like bits and pieces. Maybe it had corona or, you know, we may not be entirely happy in this home. We want to fix it a bit. Okay, but it's still our home. Our experience is our home. And it's an attitude that helps. Another place that I mentioned earlier, Appomattox, it's an interesting, very important description of practice. It's mindfulness with caring. It's not exactly the same as what I was saying just now, the going to, the being part of, the being partner with, being close to, being with. It actually has an agenda called caring. But it goes to the same place. Because mindfulness is not technical, dry, technique, naked, or sometimes called bare attention. There's no such thing as bare attention. It's, if you read the books of 20 years ago, they talk about bare attention, the Buddhist books. There isn't such a thing as bare attention. Attention isn't just like a computer that just deals with electricity. Attention is always got juice in it. It's always got interest. It's always, you attend to something because it's alive for you, because you're curious about it, because that's important right now. That's already feeling behind attention. So attention is active. It's a choice. And Appomattox is saying, we make choices according to what's helpful. So we pay attention and we care for what is helpful to us. So here's another dimension that really helps our practice. It's helpful to us to reconnect with our body. We begin to listen to our body and we will listen to the voices in our body that says, I'm here, I'm with you. I'm not your enemy. Love me too. And it brings healing. It brings intimacy and closeness with ourselves. It brings benefit. It brings harmony. Reconnecting with ourselves instead of being scattered everywhere is a caring for ourselves. And there is an agenda that we can be aware of. When we breathe, the breath is not just technical. How many breaths? Let me count them. Oh, only three this time. It's not technical. Breath is our whole life is, and the whole planet is depending on this, these breaths. Each breath is so precious. Each experience is so precious. I'm sure all of you have had experience in school where you were paying attention to a fly on the wall. And the fly was really interesting. And the teacher said, "Pay attention. Can be a nature class." But I am paying attention. The fly is calling your attention because that's what's important right now. The fly is talking to you. We do know how to do it. Nature is all the time calling us from childhood. And nature is important. And we can feel what's important and what needs our care. And that will help us with our practice. A breath is not just a boring in-out of oxygen. It's a whole life. If we understand that our cells are talking, they're a whole life. What's the energy in our body? What's the energy in our hands and our feet and our... What's... Our thoughts are so beautiful. Even if they seem a lot of noise, but they're voices. We can listen to them differently. I care for my thoughts. We can sense that they are the voices in us. And we can care for them. We can I don't know, soften them. Look what's happening here in this retreat. Can we sense the love and attention, the apamada, that the cooks are using when they're cooking our food, with just that right amount of spices and not more, not less. It's just this one, just that one. It's apamada, it's mindfulness with care. And we benefit. Sometimes, I have a vegetable garden, and actually 30, 40 years, this is for me an absolute must, that every year I plant all year the vegetables, and I grow the seed from seeds and then little plants, and then I plant the plants, and I grow the food. My wife and I, we grow the food for ourselves and our grandchildren and so on. So we have a vegetable garden, and I look after it every year, and I'm quite busy with it. And sometimes people come and they say, "Oh, you've got a beautiful vegetable garden. That's really wonderful. Let me go in and have a look." And they sort of charge in and step on little little plants this big that they don't notice are there. And they're so it's so lovely. They love it. But what are you doing? Where are you stepping, actually? Do you notice? Apamada, paying attention and being full of care. And it really helps our practice to sort of feel the caring that goes into our awareness when we look at ourselves, when we touch the earth, when we breathe, when we, see a thought with care, caring our stream of consciousness. It's also a bit like the breath. So, this is all about hearing the invitation of our experience and being available to it, turning to it from love and from being with our experience, being available to our experience, allowing it to be what it is, not being in the usual mind of having to change everything. That is a way in which we can find deeper stillness, deeper quiet, deeper concentration. And as I said before, it's not an instead of determination, because sometimes we will need determination as well. But we shouldn't get totally kind of defining our practice as like going to the gym and just depending on determination and measuring how many meters and how many steps and how fast I'm going. It's a totally another way. Surrender into, be with, be close to, care for, allow, and be open and relaxed. And it's parallel. So I invite you all to practice in this week especially and see what happens. Thank you. So let's take a couple of minutes of quiet. Actually, we'll take longer than a couple of minutes because it's only 8:10, and we have some time, so let's just take a little bit longer to practice in the way I suggested. So time for walking, and then at 9 o'clock, sitting here.